From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in a myth of sorts, a myth about race and school segregation. Journalist Nicole Hannah-Jones is a newly minted MacArthur Fellow. She won a Genius Award, recognized for her relentless work regarding race and education in American schools. Jones has sought to highlight the impact of our continuing segregation, but in particular, I want to highlight something that she wrote about who is responsible. Quote, "The most common myth that I confront is that racism, discrimination, and segregation are Southern phenomena, when clearly the most segregated parts of the country are in the Northeast and the Midwest, areas with white folks who believe that they are quite progressive, who say they believe in integration, but practice segregation. My work in recent years has been most critical in trying to discomfort white progressives who'd like to believe that I'm writing about someone else. Really? I'm writing about them." End quote. This is not a story about someone else doing something wrong, something that we would never engage in. This is a story about all of us. The local organization called Great Schools for All is bringing Nicole Hannah-Jones to Rochester for an event on Thursday night. But first, we're having a conversation about these often difficult but vital issues here on Connections. And let me go ahead and welcome our guest for the hour. A member of the leadership team of Great Schools for All is Mark Hare, who's back in studio. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you, Evan.
Also here is Dr. Andy Alleen. He's assistant professor of clinical pediatrics at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Alleen, welcome to you.
Thank you, Evan.
And Andrew Brown's here. He is a managing partner of Brown Hutchinson LLP, but really he's here speaking on behalf of Regents. He's vice chancellor of the New York State Board of Regents. And Regent Brown, great to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Well, Mark, I'm going to start with you here. Nicole Hannah-Jones is a big, big name if you follow these issues closely. You booked her not even knowing she'd win a Genius Award, I think. That was just timing.
Well, that was our plan all along.
Is that right?
Of course.
Yes. That was just announced last week. But what's coming up Thursday night?
So Thursday night, Nicole will be speaking at Third Presbyterian Church at the corner of East Avenue and Meg Street at 7 p.m. I suggest that you get there early if you can. It's free and open to the public. She will be talking about school segregation, in particular in the North. She'll probably talk about her own experiences with her daughter in New York City schools, I would expect. And there will be other things that will challenge all of us, I think, to think long and hard about how we got to where we are and what we can do about it. So that will be at 7 p.m. The event, by the way, I should say, is organized by Great Schools for All, but also sponsored by the City of Rochester, the YWCA of Rochester Monroe County, the Rochester Area Community Foundation, and the Farish Foundation. So I'm expecting a really good turnout for this. And she is, if you've listened to her on YouTube or read any of her work, she is
This American Life, otherwise. Yeah.
This American Life, she is a force of nature.
So Mark, when she writes that she is writing about, when she talks about essentially segregation, modern segregation in American schools, that she is not necessarily talking about the South. She's talking about the Northeast, the Midwest. She is talking about, in her words, white folks who believe they are progressive, who believe in integration but practice segregation. That is one step away from saying there's a lot of white hypocrites out there. I mean, those are strong words. How do you feel about that?
I think what she's talking about is the very definition of what people refer to as institutional racism. You have a lot of people in this community and other communities who are not personally racist, don't necessarily have any kind of animosity in their bones. But we have institutions, and I think if you look at just the institutional structure of education in New York State, where we have school districts in this county alone, I think 18 or 19 school districts, where people can choose to send their kids to public schools that are completely separate from other kids in other public schools. And the result of that, not just in Rochester, but all around the state and certainly across the Northeast, is that you have essentially every urban area, every large city is very poor. School districts are very poor, high poverty, segregated classrooms, surrounded by suburbs, some of which are pretty wealthy and have all the resources. So, and you have multiple examples of communities where local officials didn't take any action to take advantage of the federal fair housing laws to build affordable housing in the suburbs. Many towns didn't want that to happen. So the result is you have an urban core that is very poor, heavily minority, and school districts that reflect that reality, surrounded by wealthier communities. The caveat of Monroe County, by the way, is that the entire community, not just the city, is now much poorer than it was 30 years ago. So you will see in suburban school districts many, a much higher percentage of low-income disadvantaged students than you would have 30 years ago. But the structure that she's talking about is very real. And unless we are willing to work together as a community, we feel at Great Schools that we can't solve this problem.
All right. So in a second, I'm going to hear what our other guests have to say about these issues, because they're here with their expertise in various capacities. But I want to stay with Mark for one second here, because you've been on this program in the last few years. We've talked about, for example, Wake County, North Carolina, mm-hmm. which I believe Great Schools has traveled to, right?
Yep.
You've been there. And for listeners who might have heard that name invoked on this program over the years, the short story is that in the mid to late 1970s, Wake County essentially integrated county and city schools. Now, it was a little different there because I think they had one urban district and one countywide district, not 19 or 20 as you have here. But they essentially integrated. And, you know, Mark and his colleagues at Great Schools have felt like, well, maybe we missed the bus in the 1980s. Maybe we should have done something like that. But absent anything like that, I don't know where you're drawing optimism from that things are going to go in a different direction. I mean, people in Pittsford are not moving to Rochester. People in Spencerport didn't even want urban suburban. What gives you optimism? You told me before the program you're more optimistic now than 5 years ago.
I am because, let me back up a second. I don't think that the evidence and the facts are going to change many people's minds. I don't think that's the way people...
What do you mean, the evidence and the facts?
I mean, we can present you with all kinds of studies about the outcomes being much better for low-income students in integrated schools than in non-integrated schools and segregated schools.
But that's not going to convince
families. I don't think that's going to convince people.
Yeah.
But here's why I'm optimistic. A year ago, Great Schools did a poll, a professional poll, survey of parents, city and suburban, and even to our surprise, the support for integrated schools, diverse schools, even schools that would involve sending your children across school district lines, was overwhelming among younger parents. Over 80% city and suburban parents combined favor diverse schools for their kids. So I think that's a very different story than the narrative that we've been carrying around about Rochester for the last 40 years. The last time somebody asked the question in the 80s, people said, no, never over my dead body would we do this. We moved to the suburbs to get away from the city. We want nothing to do with it. That's not the way parents in their late 20s to early 40s feel today. We don't think that means that the first time you set up a school that everybody's going to race to it. What we do feel confident about is that you can now have this conversation in this community with this population. And that if you can start with a couple of schools that are inter-district schools run by multiple school districts that are truly integrated, you can begin to build on that.
But
I think the support is there for it.
Is there a concern that it's easier in a poll to say, oh, yeah, I definitely want integration, I would do that, and then in practice, actually doing it?
I think, yes, of course, that's true. But I think it also reflects that there is more empathy, more sympathy, more understanding that this is a diverse world. And when you ask people why they want diversity for their kids, it's all the reasons that they should want, that this is going to make them think more creatively, learn to appreciate people who are different from them, navigate a complex world better. So, yeah, we don't suppose that 80% of all the parents of Monroe County would immediately register their kids in inter-district schools or integrated schools. But I do think it's safe to say that you can now have this conversation. People will listen, and they'll talk about it.
Listeners, I'm going to appeal to you. I want to hear directly from listeners, and I'm not just going to say young parents, like Mark just said, or younger parents, but there is that interesting sort of generational shift that Mark is talking about, that the polls show, that if you're in your 20s and you haven't started a family yet, but you think about it, maybe you're not going to be the family that just moves to the suburbs, or maybe you're more intentional. Maybe you really are looking at the evidence that says it's not simply good to be in a wealthy, almost racially monolithic district. Or it's not, I'm going to say it's not good. There's wonderful districts, of course, but is there more to offer for our kids? And is there a better choice? 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Where are your kids going to go to school? What matters most to you? And do you line up with this poll that shows that we are shifting, that there is more willingness to consider these interdistrict or more integrated schools? Dr. Aline is here because there's evidence and there's research, and we like to look at the evidence on this program. Doctor, what does the evidence tell us about how kids are impacted in terms of who they go to school with?
Well, that's exactly the right question, Evan. So thanks very much for asking that. You know, I work at the medical center. Medical care is very important for health, but health is a lot more than medical care. And as much as we like to talk about getting your DNA tested and figuring out what to do to cure all your diseases in the future and stuff like that. What we know right now for what the reality is that your zip code matters more for your health than your genetic code. And part of what's going on with that is poverty and education and other social determinants of health. And we have, in the city of Rochester, some pretty bad health statistics. We have big disparities by zip code. And for some health statistics in Rochester, they're as bad as in some low-income countries, you know, what we used to call the third world. And what we know from the experience in global health is that if you were in charge of a place like that and you wanted to zoom up the health of your population, one of the things that should be at the top of your list is to teach girls to read. Because literacy is one, particularly maternal literacy, is one of the prime determinants of health at a population level. So we know literacy is really important. We know education is really important for your health throughout your whole life course. It determines your economic opportunities, if you can finish high school versus not, if you can read at a 10th grade level versus not. These are huge factors in your economic opportunities. And then that determines your chronic stress and all of your risk factors for every kind of disease, not just in childhood, but all through life.
But one follow-up there, because what you're talking about are how to help students, kids who are maybe coming more from poverty, more adverse circumstances. I think what Mark is talking about is to get to that scenario, you've got to have parents convinced it might not be a zero-sum game, or even if it is a zero-sum game, it's worth giving a little. In other words, usually white but wealthier parents who choose the suburbs, you know, sort of results be damned, because they're concerned about that. So what do you say to a parent who says, well, doctor, what's the impact on my kid if we go from the current setup, pick any district that's suburban in this area, I don't have to just pick on any individually, what happens to those kids if we make it more integrated?
Well, I work with those young people who are making those decisions about where to live every day. Because I'm working with medical students and residents working at the University of Rochester, and they're that age of, if they're staying in Rochester, figuring out where to live. And I know from them and from other sources, we haven't done this specifically in the kind of poll that Mark was talking about, but there's a huge demand from middle-class people to be able to just stay in the city where they already are, near where they work, near where all of the amenities of an urban area are. And what's keeping them from doing that is the quality of the schools. But if there's a quality school where kids are doing well and is integrated, that is not seen as a downside. That's seen as an upside, because people value that diversity and that exposure to different kinds of kids. And what we know from the evidence from places like Raleigh, North Carolina, is that the poor kids do way, 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 way better in terms of graduating from high school, et cetera, but there's no downside in terms of academic achievement for the middle class.
That's the key here. There is not viewed as a zero-sum, essentially, there's not a downside, there's not a lessening.
There's no downside for the middle class kids, and if anything, they perceive it as a benefit. When a few years ago they tried to roll back the integration in Wake County, the students had protests and said, no, we don't want this to roll back. We're benefiting from this. And there's a 95% approval among parents in Wake County with the way the schools are.
All right. So before I jump to our first phone call, and it's Dan in Rochester. Dan, stay right there. Let me ask Andrew Brown, who is the Vice Chancellor of the New York State Board of Regents. What is the role of regents in a conversation like this, and what is regents doing?
Evan, let me say a couple of things first. Dr. Aileen just hit on a point that is essential to this discussion, and that is that white students don't suffer when you have integration. We have to begin to make the business case for integration. That's not been done up to now and continuing. Many people think that when you talk about integration, you're talking about benefits that only flow to children of color. That's a big mistake. We have to begin to make the case, the worthy case, that the benefits flow to all, including white students.
All right, and I think that's what we're hearing from everyone in this room today. And what can regents do then to help with that? I mean, what's the role that you view?
We've been looking at this issue for a long time. Unfortunately, the Board of Regents can't reshape school district lines. We leave that to localities. The Board of Regents has been speaking on the issue of integration and talking about the importance of that, the importance to students of color, the importance to white students. We also can look at such issues as teacher retention. If you look at schools that have poor integration, you generally find, in those schools that are most underperforming, you generally find teachers that don't stick around as long. So you have teacher retention problems. You also can talk about the benefits, the larger benefits, the social benefits. For instance, if you are a white student living in a district and you have no exposure to other students of color and you have no exposure to teachers of color, and then at some point you're going to graduate from high school, you are not prepared for life after that. If you move out of your district, you're going to come to find that, wow, there are people who don't look like me. So I do believe that there was a larger benefit. I also believe the benefit of integration can be impactful on racial issues. We have many people who have concerns around race. Many are misguided thoughts. But if you have students who are fully integrated with other students who don't look like them, I think when they enter the real world, if you will, they will not be so shocked by the benefits that they will find.
Something that the Vice Chancellor just mentioned is diversity of teaching staffs, and that is something that WXXI covered extensively in our series of reports called Degrees of Diversity that you can still find online. We are going to continue to track over time those numbers, but as much as we can talk about sort of self-segregated schools, which is the state of our schools here, teaching staffs are even less diverse, and it's pretty remarkable when you see those numbers. So to what Andrew's talking about, are students really graduating, many students graduating without going to school with just with very few peers of color, but also sometimes never having a teacher of color. So,
Evan, can I just can I just mention one thing on that point? Not long ago, at a Board of Regents meeting, a student came and presented to us, and someone asked a question about integration in his school. This is a young man who was had just graduated from high school and was beginning to start college this past September. He went through every level of education, primary, secondary, and never had one white student in his classroom. Not one. There's something very wrong with that.
All right, let me grab our first phone call. Dan in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a teacher in the city of Rochester, and I send my children to the city schools. And one of the reasons my wife and I decided to make that choice is because, as white parents, we can't help integrate the suburbs, but we can help integrate the city schools. But I would take issue with the idea that it's just a self-selection that results in segregation. I think that it's actually legalized. When the school district boundaries are drawn by the state government, then that's the state government making a decision as to who gets to live where. And my question for the vice chancellor is, though you've spoke often about segregation and its impact, why not demand of our state legislators redraw the bounds and make it a metro district in Monroe County?
Dan, thanks very much for the phone call, the question. I appreciate it. Andrew, can I start with you on that from the Regents' perspective or the state policy perspective? Thank you, Dan.
Dan, I appreciate your call, and I wish I did have the authority to rewrite district lines. Unfortunately, we don't have that authority. I do believe that this issue is bigger than the Board of Regents. We, the Board of Regents, along with the governor, along with state legislators, really have to tackle this. This is largely an issue that is the result of town lines. Municipalities are able to have school districts and largely operate their school districts as they please with respect to who attends their schools. There has to be changes, I agree. And to the extent that we can all come together and work on that, I think it's going to be essential. I think the issue is way too big to expect it to happen otherwise.
Mark, on the policy side, what do you say to Dan, who is saying that as a white parent, he told our screeners he can't integrate the suburbs, but he can help with integration in city districts. He's choosing to be there, but he's also looking at the larger policy issues on who's drawing district lines. What can you say from the Great Schools for All and policy perspective on that?
It appears to us, having done a fair amount of research on this and talked to a number of people, that the question of a countywide school district is essentially impossible in New York State if one of those school districts is one of the big five cities. The New York Constitution requires that the city school districts be coterminous with the city line. They don't have independent taxing authority as suburban districts do or rural districts do. They are essentially part of city government, although they have school boards. So we've looked at this quite a bit. And even if there were support for it, it would seem that it would require a change in the New York Constitution basically to separate city school districts from city government to let that happen. So that seems like a very long shot. So we're trying to figure out what are the ways you could begin to replicate some of those outcomes that you see in other parts of the country without going that route. And that's why we propose this kind of network of inter-district schools that would be managed by two or three or more school districts that would be intentionally diverse that could begin to achieve some of those outcomes.
If I could
jump in, another issue with state law and policy is that if more people wanted to do what Dan is talking about and have one integrated school building at a time as we're building towards trying to integrate the entire school district, right now the law is not favorable to that, because it says that schools need to look like the demographic makeup of where they are. And so if you wanted to replicate what they did in Wake County and have a school that has maximum 40% poverty, technically you're not really allowed to do that now. And so that's another thing that if we could have policy change would be a step forward in the kind of integration that Dan is talking about just within the city. And he's a great example of what I'm talking about, of this huge demand among middle-class people in the city right now to keep their kids in the city and city schools and help integrate the schools.
Let me get Ted in Farmington next up on the phones. Ted, go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm for you, 30 years ago, probably 25 years ago, when we were making a decision to where to live as we started our family, we made the decision based on where we wanted to send our kids to school. Mm-hmm. We had no objection to staying in the city. In fact, we were in the city at the time. We had, you know, we had friends who were black or Latino. That wasn't an issue. The issue was that the graduation rate in the city school district was like 21% at the time, and I mean the scores were horrible, and we had no evidence that our children weren't going to suffer by being in those city schools. It sounds like you've got some very different evidence now, and that would have convinced us to stay. I love the city. My wife grew up in the city. We would have raised our kids there and sent them to school in city school districts had we had any real facts that indicated that they wouldn't have been harmed.
So Ted, stay there for a second, because I think, Mark, here, what I'm hearing from Ted is, you know, his kids are now out of school, but what your polls show are that parents now who are the age he was when they were making those decisions are viewing things differently. Do you think it's because they're hearing the evidence that this is a more common conversation? Are there different approaches? I mean, what do you make of what Ted is telling you?
Well, I think, first of all, the younger people are in some ways just more cosmopolitan. I mean, they understand these issues in ways that their parents and grandparents did not. That's the first thing. The second thing I would say is that you have to get to a certain mix to have the maximum outcomes from an integrated school. So when you get to a point where 75 or 80% of the children in the school are very low income and come from very low income neighborhoods, that's going to affect the outcome. So you want something that's closer to a 50-50 mix of students, middle class and low income. But there are ways to succeed even without that. I mean, one of the things you probably will hear from Nicole Hannah-Jones this week is that she'll talk about her own experience in New York City. She and her husband decided 2 years ago to send their daughter to a very poor school instead of pursuing one of the kind of elite magnet programs that are available in New York City. They went the other route because they felt in the same way that they wanted to integrate socioeconomically that school where they were, and that they knew they had the resources to provide their daughter with the opportunities that she might not get otherwise in the school. I mean, they could take her wherever she needed to go. And they did that, and they've been very happy with it. So it does take a few pioneering parents, but I think it's also a heavy lift to ask any parent to send their child to a school where they fear that child will not get the education they deserve.
Exactly.
That's a heavy lift.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And I don't think it's really any different now than it was 25 years ago. I honestly think there are people who are thinking and looking at the facts. If you can get those facts out there, I think people 25 years ago would have made the same choices, or at least the progressive people the 25 years ago. We consider ourselves progressive. We would have made the choice to stay in the city had we had information that indicated it wouldn't have harmed our children.
Mm-hmm. Ted, thanks for the phone call. And look, I also want to say, I know I mentioned on occasion on this program, I've got a 5.5-year-old. We look at him in the same way that parents like Ted and probably everyone listening who's a parent has to make decisions. I'm not saying it's easy from the host chair. I'm not. And, you know, you look at your child and you don't think, well, that's a social experiment, and we've got a large sample size. We think, well, I've got one, or families have two or three. What do I do? So I think that's why Mark is saying it's a heavy lift to ask a parent to do something they think would be harmful. It's the point is, the evidence is showing that maybe we have had misperceptions. Let me read an email along those lines. Gabe writes to us and says, I'm a 47-year-old father of a 3, 5, and 8-year-old. We recently moved to the Rochester area from out of state. Based on our criteria, we chose to live in Canandaigua. I do wish we had more diverse neighbors, but that comes after a safe, smaller community with good schools on our priority list. Inequity in school funding is rooted in unfair real estate taxes. It should be based on per capita users. My job is to provide the best for my children. Completely acknowledging the privilege I benefit from, what incentive do we have to lessen my children's education? And then he says, to add context, we are members of a larger biracial family and are painfully aware of segregation. But Gabe's view, Mark Hare, is that choosing otherwise, and they chose Canandaigua, choosing otherwise would lessen the education.
And clearly there are plenty of people who feel that way. And I guess my response to that is that it won't. And that's what we've been talking about around this table this afternoon, and that's what the evidence says. If you send a middle-class child to a school, and this has less to do with race, although race is always a factor here. If you send a middle-class child to a school that is 98% poor, that child will have some problems. That's kind of a given. But if you send those children to schools that are 50-50, 60-40, even 70-30, that factor goes away. So I think the idea that the simple fact that your child goes to a school with poor children puts them at a disadvantage is just not borne out by the evidence. You have to do those schools right. If they're diverse schools, there's planning that goes into it. You have to have the right kind of programs. You have to have the right opportunities for kids to interact and get to know each other. But it's not a disadvantage to send them there. When people talk about even outcomes, yeah, it's true. If you have a school that is, say, 50% very low income and you have a number of kids in that school who are economically disadvantaged and who are also educationally behind, your composite test scores will be lower than they would be in Pittsburgh. But the scores of those middle-class families and those middle-class students will not be. That's the distinction to be made here.
All right, I'm late for a break. I do want Andrew, can you weigh in just briefly, Andrew, on what Gabe's email said? You know, he wants to know, how can you tell my family to do something that might lessen the impact or lessen the quality for my kids?
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to family choice, certainly. But one thing I want to point out is, again, there's no evidence that white students do worse when they are in an integrated school district. One other thing I want to point out is we need to incentivize districts to work across district lines. Here within the city of Rochester, you can't achieve integration because you have such a large population of students of color. So even if you move students around, you're still not going to have meaningful integrated schools in all of the different schools. So you have to find ways to incentivize districts to work with each other across district lines.
All right, listeners, if you're on the line, we're going to get as many of your phone calls in. I have a long pile of email already. There's a lot of interest in this subject. If you're just joining us, we're here for a couple of reasons, but mainly because on Thursday night, October 26th, so this Thursday, starting at 7 p.m. at Third Presbyterian Church on Meg Street in Rochester, Great Schools for All is hosting an evening with Nicole Hannah-Jones. Now, Nicole Hannah-Jones, who couldn't be with us today, is an award-winning journalist and essentially the country's foremost investigative journalist on the issue of race and schools. She's going to be here Thursday night starting at 7 p.m., Third Presbyterian Church at Meg Street. The event is free. You can register if you want, because as Mark Hare said, it's probably going to fill up. Go to the Great Schools for All website. Great Schools for All's organizational webpage is GS4, as in the number, GS4A.org. GS4A.org. So we're talking about Nicole Hannah-Jones's work, related themes when it comes to diversity in our schools, the choices we make as parents, and we'll get your feedback after this break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we sit down with the National Director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Barry Lynn is in Rochester for an event with the local chapter today. But first, he's our guest for the hour, and we will talk about his work over 25 years regarding church and state separation and his view now, with President Trump saying Christianity is under assault and that's going to change, that we're going to say Merry Christmas again and the like. That's next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. On Twitter, Sarah says, we chose our home in East Irondequoit because of the diverse district, 50-50 with white and non-white students. And she says, we don't have kids yet, but when we do, we would fully support integrated schools or a countywide school district. The biggest hurdle is busing, and there's a great This American Life episode called The Problems We All Live With. Transportation is a big issue for parents. So that comes to us from Sarah. Let me grab on the phones Ruth in Rochester next. Go ahead, Ruth.
Hi. My husband and I moved here in 1989 with a 2- and 5-year-old. We live in Rochester. We sent our kids to city schools. They are now functioning adults with jobs, advanced degrees, and I believe they had an excellent education in the city schools. We're a middle-class white family. They were in the extreme minority in some of their classes racially, but they had friends of all kinds and didn't have a problem with it. So just one more family who had success in the city school.
Ruth, thanks very much for the phone call. Just another data point, and again, anecdotal, and I understand. We like evidence. Anecdotes are helpful. But I think in this case, hearing these personal experiences is powerful, because that's one of the things that Andrew Brown, when we just talked in our brief break, what's going to sort of turn the tide. You got to convince wealthier families that this is good for them. It's not just that it's good for others. We have to sort of be pragmatic here, right?
Absolutely. I think one of the problems that we face is, again, many people think that when you talk about integration, you're talking about benefits that flow only to students of color. The benefits flow equally to white students. And as this last caller just mentioned, her kids grew up, went to city schools, graduated, and went on to do very well. My guess is also that they are very much more equipped to deal with a global economy, having experienced students that don't look like them and probably students who don't come from the same economic background.
Let me read an email from Tim in Pittsford, because, again, Pittsford's a district that's been invoked quite a bit. He says, it's funny how students from Pittsburgh seem to do really well in the real world without having a ton of exposure to black students or black teachers. That is not anecdotal. How do you explain this? Mark Hare?
Well, I think people who have the most advantages generally are pretty successful in life. I mean, that's just kind of the way the world works. So what we don't know is what some of those people who've graduated from Pittsford schools or other very wealthy, all white, basically, essentially white, affluent schools are missing in life. I don't think anyone argues that you can graduate from essentially an all white, very wealthy suburban school district and get a good job and succeed. I mean, I think that's likely to be the case. That doesn't mean that you're really prepared as the way you ought to be or could be to navigate the world that you live in. So I don't think it's a contradiction. And I think the reason why people continue to want to send their kids to some of those suburban districts is because they know it gives them advantage. It gives them a chance. You know, it's not directly reflected in the poll I mentioned, but we've had many, many conversations with young parents in focus groups and elsewhere who will say, look, I don't really want to move to the suburbs, but I'm worried that if I don't, my kids aren't going to get the kind of education they need. They know they can get those kids through school if they go to Brighton or Pittsford or Fairport. They'll have good grades, they'll get into good colleges, and they'll get good jobs. They also know that there's something missing. So it's a hard one to respond to, because obviously many, many people who go to those wealthier schools graduate and do fine.
Yeah, and can I go ahead? Because I went to the Pittsford of Cleveland, mm-hmm. a district, Westlake on the west side. It's where a lot of Cleveland athletes move and put their kids down. That's where I grew up. And I can relate to what Tim is saying. A lot of my mostly white peers got what you would call decent jobs, decent paying jobs, had a lot of advantages like I did personally. And if you just look at those metrics, okay, the outcomes are pretty good. Those should not be the only metrics we're looking at, especially when we can recognize inequality in the world. Do you want, because then the question would, that Tim and other parents might have is, okay, but are the outcomes going to change for, in other words, job and stability is exactly what parents want for their kids. But the point is, the more we integrate, those usually white, socioeconomically advantaged families are not going to be disadvantaged by the integration, Tim. That's kind of what we're saying, is the outcomes can be just as good, but they can also be more prepared for a diversity of jobs, not sort of the narrow sort of power privileged jobs that happen to be there for a lot of kids like me. I'll just put myself in that category. So, but I think Tim's asking a fair question, and a lot of parents want to weigh in here too. So,
Evan, one other line on this, though, because I think Nicole actually wrote an essay in the New York Times in February of this year titled, "Have We Lost Sight of the Promise of Public Schools?" In which she makes the point that for the last several decades, more and more people have treated public schools like you would treat a business. You're shopping around looking for the best places to go, the most entitled places with the best outcomes, the best test scores, the highest of all of that. And people obviously are free to do that. We have a system that allows them to do it. But there's a larger question to ask. What happens to our society, to our city, to our county, to our state, if we have a system that leaves large swaths of children behind so that some children can succeed very well? And she asks in this essay a question. She says, democracy works only if those who have the money or the power to opt out of public things choose instead to opt in for the common good. It's called a social contract, and what we've seen in cities where the social contract is broken. White residents vote against tax hikes to fund schools where they don't send their children, parks go untended, libraries shutter. That's what happens. I mean, that ought to be on the table too, that it's not just what do I get for my child, but how do we have institutions that serve everyone?
All right, doctor?
I just want to add in something else in response to Tim at the level of pluses and minuses for his own individual kids. And not this past Sunday, but the one before, the New York Times Magazine was about the surging anxiety among young people in America, sometimes with serious impacts on their lives. And part of the theory behind why we're sort of seeing this epidemic of anxiety in college-age kids, so, you know, privileged, upper-middle-class, middle-class kids, is the bubble wrapping and sheltering that they've had through their parenting. And so one can go too far in protecting kids and making things easy for them.
All right, back to the phones. We go Mike in Brighton next. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question that I hope will, I can present in a way that your guests will see where I'm heading with it. When I was a child, I was in the just general Regents level of math, and I was in a big suburban school district in near Syracuse. And there were classes that were advanced on an advanced placement track. There were our classes, and then there were the kids who were lower achieving. And all of those students, those three groups, would learn together, or were rather in their own section of math classes. And at some point in my childhood, either the state or the district, and I don't know which because, again, I was the kid, decided to try a heterogeneous grouping for math students where all of those students were mixed together. So now rather than just Regents students in my class, AP students in their classes, et cetera, everybody was in a class together. And in my personal experience, I spent an entire year relearning things I already knew because the teachers had no choice but to teach mostly to the kids who needed the most assistance. Sadly for myself, this project, you know, I guess somebody realized it wasn't working out. They went back to the old way, and then I was way behind my peers who had been tracked with their own group. So I was placed back with other Regents kids, and they now were two full semesters ahead of me because my teacher had, through no fault of his own, he was an awesome teacher, had to spend so much time helping the kids who needed the most help that he was unable to really provide new information to the kids who had already learned it. So I guess my question is, and first of all, I think this is an awesome idea, being, you know, Mike from Brighton on the phone, clearly I've made a choice for my children. But, you know, if something like this happens, you know, I would probably consider moving back to the city. I'm definitely in favor of this sort of a scheme, but I want to see if the guests could speak to how they might help to ensure that teachers were equipped to teach both children who would be, you would have to assume would be coming in at a slight disadvantage, while at the same time not leaving behind the kids who would have been in their classes to begin with. And I hope that makes sense.
Sure. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. I'll start with the Vice Chancellor of the New York State Board of Regents. That's Andrew Brown. Go ahead.
We want more AP classes in all schools, not less. One of the things that we see is that in the more affluent districts, you find more AP classes, which means that in the districts that have high populations of students of color usually have less AP classes. So that is a problem. And we don't want to offer less. We want to offer more. We don't want to offer more AP classes to all districts throughout the state, not only those in more affluent areas.
Okay. Mark Hare, what do you make of that phone call?
Well, I'm sympathetic. I mean, that was a while ago, and I don't know exactly how it happens, but I think part of the issue is at what point do you go to those heterogeneous classrooms? How does that happen? When does it happen? Under what circumstances? And it sounds like in this particular case, maybe it didn't work the way it should have. One thing we know is that, and this goes all the way back to the Coleman report after the civil rights law, is that the most profound influence on the outcome of students in a classroom are those who are with them, the peers in that school and in that classroom. So even I remember in my school, and that was a long time ago, we had one math class, and there were some kids in that math class, myself included when it came to trigonometry, who didn't get it at all. Luckily, I had other students who helped me. There were other kids in that classroom. And one of the big factors here that we see in some of these integrated schools is the impact that students have on other students, the way their classroom life is structured so that they interact with each other. And every time a student who's a trig whiz has to teach a kid like me who's not a trig whiz, they learn more about trigonometry themselves. So I can sympathize with the predicament, but I can also tell you there are ways to make sure it doesn't happen.
Well said. We're going to try to get as many as we can in for the rest of the hour because we are flooded on the phones and emails. This is Rebecca in Rochester. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to follow up on the commenter from Canandaigua, you know, concerned about children's education being lessened by being in the city of Rochester. I'm a parent of a almost 2-year-old and a almost 4-year-old in the city of Rochester, and we're planning on staying in the city and sending our kids to city of Rochester schools because I think, you know, while I wouldn't argue you have to be completely invested in your children's education and very involved, and maybe there's concerns about lack of specific opportunities to coursework or sports programming, I think the benefits that students get by being in the city of Rochester and being exposed to such a diverse student population are just overwhelming. And we struggle with being in a society where we live in these silos and we don't interact with people who are not like us. And, you know, this is the perfect opportunity, a diverse school system, to create those interactions that you may never get in life. The longer that you stay in your racially or culturally or socioeconomically divided society.
What do your friends say, Rebecca? What do your friends say about that?
They say, when are you moving to the suburbs?
That's like the default assumption, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think we just talk about all the reasons we're staying. We talk about the great schools for all data, and we talk about the other communities in Rochester that where this data is proven. And so you just need to reflect on that and trust it.
Thank you, Rebecca, for the phone call. Dr. Lean, you want to jump in?
Well, I think we have to applaud people like Rebecca and just point out that some of this conversation is a chicken and the egg kind of a thing, that we're dealing with feedback loops, if people start doing this and telling their friends, then other people will start doing it. And we're seeing, as I've been saying since the beginning, there is this demand for this among young middle-class people about to have school-age kids or who have school-age kids in the city or willing to stay. And they just need to know there are others like them And if we can get the ball rolling, it will snowball and it will start moving things in the right direction. This is a problem that took 50 years to create. We're not going to solve it overnight. We shouldn't expect to have an overnight solution, but that doesn't mean we can't start moving in the right direction.
And Mark, she says they're even considering great schools for all data. So you're breaking through.
There you have it. That's right. No, it's slow but sure.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls, and let me jump to, oh my gosh, there's so many calls here. Let me go ahead and get Gwendolyn, who's been waiting on line one. Go ahead, Gwen.
Yes, I'm a retired Syracuse City School District teacher and one of those pioneering parents. I had my suburban kids where we lived go to city schools to be part of the inclusive education, which today is just, you know, all the kids are included. And my kids are all doing very well, a very rich education because of the diversity they went to school with. But I want to actually point to a different tack I would like to enter in the conversation. We're about to face a teacher shortage, too many retirements, and too few young people choosing a STEM career of all colors. And I mean a teaching career, but also the STEM career area. We have many jobs in New York State and across the country in the area of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, that are going unfilled. And perhaps this is a way to help solve this dilemma, that we create more schools that will address these areas of need as a way of including all kids and filling two important needs that are coming up in our society, more teachers and filling these STEM jobs.
Gwen, thank you. I appreciate that. And certainly more teachers of color, more students pursuing these kind of fields. It deserves its own hour and its own program, and I certainly appreciate that. I'm about to lose the hour, and we have so many phone calls, and if we don't get to you, just know you can be there on Thursday night. Mark Hare, tell everybody why we're here, because on what's happened on Thursday night.
So on Thursday night, Nicole Hannah-Jones from the New York Times, who, as we mentioned earlier in the broadcast, just last week won a MacArthur Foundation Fellowship, also known as the Genius Award, for her work on this topic of segregation in schools, North and South, but mostly in the North at this point. She will speak at Third Presbyterian Church at 7 p.m. It's at the corner of East Avenue and Meg Street at 7 p.m. It's open to the public. And there will be a chance for questions and answers at the end of her lecture. So I think if you're interested in this topic, please come. Of course, great schools putting this event on will have opportunities for you to take part in some other activities and sign up for some other activities as well. So if this is a subject that interests you and you want to pursue it, be there.
All right, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. I'm going to work in one more quick phone call. Jim, and you got to be tight. Go ahead, Jim.
My quick question is a follow-up to the gentleman who called from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
He said he thought that the students there could do very well. Well, you know, the antidote to that was the Eastman Kodak Company. We know what happened there. Most of those executives live all in the suburbs. And they invented the digital camera, and what did they do with it? They laid off 56,000 people, MDs, PhDs, noted Ds, master's degrees. So you got to be very careful. But in a global economy where the United States has to compete against China, Japan, Western Europe, the Southeast Asian nations, Indonesia, in the Levant, you got to be very, very careful. You need to learn and understand that the United States is not the only ship that sails in the world. That's all I have to say. I'd like to hear your comment.
Well, Sam, thank you. But real quick here, Tim followed up on that the exact point Sam's making. The Pittsburgh parents, who says, come on. He said, we teach our kids about the world to be open-minded, to search for new and different experiences. We don't feel bad for moving to Pittsburgh. I'm tired of people trying to say in their own way that parents that choose to send their kids to city schools are better or more worldly because my kids are missing out on something. He says it's a joke that his kids are going to be well-prepared. Sam was raising the question, Tim pushing back. Mark Hare, you hear all those.
I do hear that, and I think the last thing that I would say and the last thing great schools would say is that people who choose to live in Pittsburgh are somehow or other not doing service to their children or to the community, or that only people who stay in the city are. What we're saying very clearly is that there's a lot of evidence which shows what the outcomes can and could be, and we're encouraging us to have a community where parents who live in Pittsburgh who want their kids to be in diverse schools will have the opportunity to do that. This isn't about saying that people who move to Pittsburgh are doing less by the way of their kids.
All right. Well, listen, this probably merits its own conversation, an ongoing conversation. And I could have just read emails and taken phone calls for about the next 4 hours, it looks like. I appreciate all of the calls and email. And once again, I just want to stress, Thursday night, 7 p.m. at Third Presbyterian Church on Meg Street, you can continue the conversation and listen to an evening with Nicole Hannah-Jones, who is probably the country's foremost journalist covering these issues, and an award-winning one. Just got a genius grant. Great Schools for All are bringing here for a free event Thursday night, 7 p.m. Jump at gs4a.org. Jump on the website and register. You can be there. Andrew Brown from the Board of Regents, always great to have you. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evan. It's a pleasure.
Mark Hare, Great Schools for All. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Dr. Andy Aline from Rochester University of Rochester Medical Center.
Thank you,
Doctor.
Very much.
More connections coming up.